Welcome to the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast, discussing and analyzing the legal implications of national security issues across the globe. Our hosts, Hogan Lovells attorneys Michael Scheimer and Tim Bergreen, have decades of hands-on experience in national security issues and how they relate to their clients' day-to-day goals. And now, here are Michael and Tim.
Hey, Tim. Nice to see you again.
Mike, it's been a while. Quite a month. March Madness, as it were.
Yeah, that's true. We're recording this for all our listeners when the cherry blossoms have bloomed in the D.C. area, which, you know, looks great, but also causes an incredible increase in traffic. I guess folks are antsy to get out in the world after a couple of years of COVID. I'm glad the weather is nice enough for that, but I'm not enjoying the crowds, just trying to get in the office.
Nope, so. Lots of crowds, but baseball's back, Final Four.
Right.
It's springtime in D.C. But actually, instead of springtime, maybe we should talk about autumn and go to the southern hemisphere today and perhaps talk about the AUKUS deal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that sounds good. So we'll pivot to Australia. You know, they're at a different part of the year than us. And for our listeners, the AUKUS Security Pact, that stands for Australia, UK, and US. That's where we get the AUKUS. I don't want to oversell it, but I think it's not wrong to say this is probably one of the most significant security arrangements. It's not really a treaty, but agreements, cooperative agreements, if you will, between these three countries in, I don't know, 20, 30 years, right?
Absolutely. You know, back during the Cold War, there was, I think it was called CETO, the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, that I think Australia was part of. And look, Australia has been a phenomenal ally for the United States and obviously for Britain for, you know, more than a century. But this is, you know, brings the whole relationship up to a new level. And at the same time, I think it's really a, you know, significant development in the Indo-Pacific. And, you know, I think that that is really where this is going to play out over the next 20 or 30 years. And I think that that's kind of where the discussion ought to lead from here.
Yes, I recall, and correct me if I'm misremembering, but I think the AUKUS arrangement, we're going to get to like the latest announcement in March, right, which is about submarines. But I recall that already within the past year or two, there was cooperation among the three allies here on hypersonics and counter hypersonics. We had a hypersonic episode earlier on, so I'm just trying to connect back to that. I think I've seen a lot of reports about doing hypersonic vehicle testing in Australia. So that's actually, I think, kind of relevant to our discussion on hypersonics we had earlier about there isn't really an industrial base in the U.S. for certain things, but the parties, the allies here and then the AUKUS agreement have agreed to cooperate on hypersonic technology. So another example of combining with your allies to perhaps leverage, you know, training facilities or things you don't have in the U.S. And the current development, it's kind of Australia getting the benefit here is, but the current development in March is that Australia is going to get support to build nuclear powered submarines, and it's nuclear powered, not nuclear armed. I can't tell you, Tim, how many times I already saw immediate misconceptions around the globe about that. So when we're saying nuclear powered, it's naval nuclear propulsion, attack subs, but not ballistic missiles armed with nuclear capability, because that's a whole different issue.
So I do think, though, and that is, you know, submarines are sort of the centerpiece of all this, and submarines are the name of the game. But I do think it's worth sort of taking a step back and reminding our listeners kind of how we got here in the first place. So there's a couple of parallel strands. There's strand number one, which was the Australia-China relationship, which for much of the last decade was actually blossoming. There was huge amounts of trade, especially raw materials going from Australia to China, as well as wine and beef and other exports. In return, obviously, there was a lot of investment from China into Australia. At one point, they, you know, sort of discussed their relationship as being sort of almost analogous to a strategic partnership. And that went on for much of the last decade. On the other hand, you know, Australia at the same time, you know, was in the midst of a naval sort of rebuilding, reconceptualization for its submarine fleet, and did a deal with the French for, I believe it was 6 diesel-powered, sort of very advanced submarines sometime around 2019. You know, 2020 comes, COVID breaks out in China, and the Australian Prime Minister makes a public statement saying that there ought to be an international panel of inquiry to find out the origins of COVID. And the Chinese at this point got very upset, you know, sort of basically declared war on the Australian economy, and I think caused a major strategic rethink inside of Australia that resulted in them rethinking whether or not their national security interests were best served by conventional submarines or whether they wanted to look for, you know, the upgraded nuclear capability. And in September of 2021, you know, 8 months after President Biden took office, that deal, the AUKUS deal that we're talking about today, was signed between the US, the UK, and Australia. And that's how we got here. I just thought it'd be good to kind of bring everybody up to speed exactly as to how we got to this place. You know, maybe this might be a good place to talk about a couple of things that I think are really kind of in your wheelhouse, Mike. One of them is, you know, the fact that this is a decades-long deal, that it involves, you know, and you talked earlier about industrial bases for hypersonics and things. The Australians have no nuclear industrial base. They have no real submarine industrial base. And how is all of this, you know, how is that OHAP going to be transported down under? And, you know, how is, you know, all of this super secret technology going to be shared between, you know, the three countries? And if you could shed a little light on any of that, because those, I think, are some of the knotty issues that people kind of below the waterline, to, you know, continue the submarine metaphor, are working on. So I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, so that's a good point on the deal with France that I had forgotten about that earlier, that the idea there would have been they would have ordered some diesel-powered submarines. You know, to be clear, sometimes when folks think of that, they're still thinking like World War II or something. But let's be realistic. Most nations still have diesel-powered submarines. There's only a handful that actually operate nuclear-powered in terms of propulsion subs. And at least among the allies here, the UK has done that from US support, right? So it's the US, the UK, and now it's going to be Australia. The advantage of nuclear-powered submarines is that they don't have the same limitations as the diesel-powered ones. They can stay submerged for months. You know, there may not always be a reason to, you know, emerge unless you have a planned trip. But that's sort of the groundbreaking aspect of that, is you can be underwater and run silent for a much, much longer time.
So question. So the plan now is this submarine deal that was announced a couple of weeks ago is that it's going to begin with a series of port visits by U.S. and British nuclear powered submarines to Australia. That's going to be followed by basing of U.S. British submarines in Perth, as well as the embedding of Australian crew onto U.S. and British subs. But at the same time, we're going to begin the building of a new class of submarine called the AUKUS. That's going to be the first one. And it's going to be a hybridized U.S.-British design. And this comes back to the question, given the NNPI restrictions, does that mean that that class of submarine is likely to have a British reactor on it?
I think that is probably the most likely. I don't believe there's been anything publicly said about how they're going to do that. But I think the idea is going to be that the UK was able to, you know, essentially develop with our support, right, their version of nuclear propulsion. It's not as if the US just sort of, you know, designs things here and then like ships a reactor to our allies. That's not how this works. My understanding would be that's probably what's going to happen for Australia, is that the UK, using the process that we have done where they only get certain bits of information about how we do it in the United States, will then replicate that with Australia. But I'm not aware, frankly, it would kind of be probably like a slap in the face to the UK if we sort of went a different way with Australia when we've not given the UK some of this information for decades. So it's the same approach, as far as I understand it, is that there's going to be some information about how the US does its nuclear naval propulsion that we're not going to give either party because we haven't done it before. But the UK success story, I guess you could put it, ideally can be replicated in Australia. And another point you said about in terms of basing and the visits, you know, let's be clear, this is going to take a while, right? We're not just delivering existing U.S. subs or something like to an ally and they're going to take possession of them. That's not what's going to happen. The idea is to help them develop their own capability the way we did with the UK. So it's going to take some time. And I think there's multiple steps or sort of, you know, like pillars of the arrangement here and how this is going to work out. And you've already sort of hit some of the beginning of those, but it's going to be a little bit of time before I think Australia has, this is our first, you know, indigenously produced Australian submarine using nuclear propulsion.
It's quite likely that before that boat launches, that I will definitely be retired, since I think we're talking the 2040s, realistically, by the time it gets into the water. Oh, and I think I left out actually one of the most important intermediate steps, which is that the Australians are going to purchase, I believe it is 3 or 4 Los Angeles class submarines from the United States. Those will be delivered, I think, in the early 2030s or so. And those are intended to sort of be the indigenous Australian bridge to their own subs. So it's a big deal. It's a long-term deal. I don't think it can be overstated, you know, how important it is, I think, in sort of a regional context. Was not lost on me that sort of in this similar time frame that this latest round of the AUKUS deal was announced, that the Philippines announced a new basing agreement with Washington that will give us access to, I think, about 4 to 6 bases in the Philippines. Clearly, I think, a signal to Beijing, not only from Washington, but from its neighbors.
I agree with that. And actually, I think they're actually going to get 3 Virginia class submarines. So that actually newer than the LA ones, the Los Angeles class, which again is telling, right? I mean, Australia was trying to get, you know, from France, you know, diesel powered attack class subs. And, you know, that, as I said, that's kind of fallen by the wayside as things have changed here. But rather than, you know, the US give them LA class subs, I believe it's going to be 3 Virginia class subs. So still slightly newer than, you know, our last generation of attack submarines. So that just, you know, reinforces that this is very unusual treatment, you know, among our wider allies, you know, other NATO allies. So that's the first step. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because it's not as if Australia is going to have to sort of wait for, it's going to take some time to build these replacement subs. I think their subs are the Collins class. And you know, just like we can have a whole other discussion about, you know, shipbuilding, whether surface ships or you know, boats, subs, that's a long lead time. It takes a while to build stuff. So to get them the 3 Virginia class subs now, sort of as the holdover point while we develop this, is going to be great for them.
Right. Those Collins class boats, they're apparently supposed to be good, very quiet, but they are nearing, I think, the end of their sort of life expectancy. And so there's a need to start looking at a replacement. You know, the other thing about this deal is, I think that's so important, is I think it's a real recognition of the changing strategic dynamic of the Pacific, where American aircraft carriers used to sort of be the big stick on the block. And increasingly, as the Chinese have built up their ship capability and their ability to sort of operate not only, you know, within sort of the first island chain, but beyond it, submarines are becoming kind of the weapon of choice for a lot of planners. I think CSIS ran a war game a few months ago about a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. And aside from actually strategic bombers launching standoff weapons, it was the U.S. submarines that were the most decisive weapon. And I think that this deal is, you know, further recognition that that submarines are going to be crucial in the Indo-Pacific.
I agree. And that reminds me that I think it was in the last year, 2022, maybe, I think there was a report from the Pentagon. So it wasn't just, you know, someone else out there, that China's Navy surpassed the U.S. Navy in size. It's like in 2022, I think it was something like 340 or 350 actual warships. And that's something that, you know, as you said, the U.S. has always prided itself on its freedom of the seas and the strength of our Navy and the reach. But China is got an aggressive shipbuilding program. So, again, you know, the point you made about submarines kind of being a decisive factor maybe in that region, all of this ties together. So I think we can follow up with some other episodes about the other things that are going on under the AUKUS partnership. I mean, the big news for March was the sub deal, which is why we're addressing that. But I still think it's interesting, and we'll probably come back and revisit things like cooperating in other areas that have been announced, like hypersonics. And my favorite one we haven't talked about yet, I think, is in the quantum computing space. Like, there's other emerging technology areas that the AUKUS countries are all going to cooperate on. So we will talk about AUKUS again in the future, but our news for March was really, hey, here's the big submarine deal.
Absolutely. All right, Mike. Well, talk to you soon. To all of our listeners out there, have a great week.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. To learn more about top 10 global law firm Hogan Lovells with more than 50 offices worldwide, please visit HoganLovells.com.